Route 616, your home for all things Marvel main continuity. That old man grunting in the background is, yes, that is a return in Dan. He's had a very good day. He's happy to be here. He can't wait to cover these comics today.
At least you're not getting stuck with Giant Man.
Okay, that's true. That's
we
true.
Most,
I'll take Thor. You managed to disappear
while we killed Johnny Storm. So now there's only two Giant Mans left, and we're out of the truly shit stuff.
Yeah, you missed the end of Johnny's run. How unfortunate. It was truly something to behold.
I feel so bad.
He went out with a patter.
They should have left him in the Middle Ages. Bring back Ben, but they should have left Johnny there.
Should have left Indiana Jones there, too. Fuck's sakes. Do not watch Dial of Destiny.
Like
it is so fucking stupid.
I'm not even going to watch it. I saw Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. It was really bad. I don't need to see another bad Indiana Jones movie with an additional 20 years shoved on them.
Oh, this is way worse than Crystal Skull. It is literally...
I've heard most people say it's better.
A full measure worse than Crystal Skull. Oh. I don't even know where to start. I mean, I've seen some bad sequels.
Well,
this
become
one
a,
is a
it's a bomb. It hasn't made its money back, so...
What's that?
Yeah, because everyone knows that, like, 68-year-old Indiana Jones... It's not that it's not relevant. It's that the actors are, like, horribly past their prime. There comes a time when you need to stop doing action movies.
Yeah, he's 81.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like Harrison Ford. He's a great actor.
He is, but he can't do Indiana Jones shit anymore.
I'm curious as to why he decided to come back.
I'm guessing it was financial?
They must have offered him a ton of money.
Well, apparently he wanted to do it. That's what I thought.
Truck full of it.
Or something's happened and he needs the money badly.
Well, maybe Callista's taking him for all he's worth.
Because I know like the only way he agreed to do the Star Wars sequels was if they killed Han, because he hated doing that so much.
I think he likes the role of Indy more, though, than he did
Han.
Well,
Indy really did make him famous.
It did.
More so than Star Wars.
Yeah, because Star Wars was an ensemble.
Yeah, and it wasn't his mainstream.
Yeah.
Indy, just everybody went to see Indiana Jones.
Yeah. I mean, everyone went to see the Star Wars 2, but most people weren't talking about Han Solo.
No.
From Star Wars. It was Luke Skywalker was getting the press.
No, it was R2-D2 getting the press, dude.
I mean, R2-D2
kind
was
of his, you know, his manservant. You know, kind of like there's you and me and, oh yeah, Ryan. He's the C-3PO of the crowd.
I was just going to go to that exact spot.
I was waiting for it when you started with the comparisons.
I was going to say Greedo, and then I thought, no, that's just mean.
I thought about Jar Jar, but I also thought that
would
just
escape the ship by now.
Oh, I suppose more topical, Jar Jar.
Also more hated.
Or Rose from the new trilogy.
I like Rose.
Oh,
they
love
fucked
Rose,
up her character.
So
but Rose
they did the same
had potential.
With Finn, right? Yeah. They started with this brilliant.
Well, Finn is the
Finn.
Ultimate job in the ball. That
let's be honest. Any character in that trilogy, including Rey, is dropping the ball.
Well, yes, Finn is spectacularly so.
Salacious crumb.
They're doing another movie with Rey, I've already heard.
Oh, yeah, they're doing another movie with Rey. But Ryan is our salacious crumb. For all you hardcore Star Wars fans who know who that is. How can you not know who this is?
Because I'm not a hardcore Star Wars fan.
You guys are supposed to be the geeks.
I don't really like Star Wars.
Oh, Ryan's looking it up now.
I don't care enough to look it up. That shows my opinion of Star Wars.
It's that guy.
Yeah, Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I just know the name.
Jabba the Hutt's palace.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little guy that R2 zaps in the butt and he jumps up onto the ceiling.
Oh, I know exactly who that is. I didn't know his
Salacious
name.
That's Salacious Crumb.
Yeah. Nice. Right. Yeah. Because I like the original Star Wars trilogy. I haven't liked anything they've done since.
Yeah. Empire Strikes Back is, to me, still one of the best sequels ever made.
Yeah. To be clear, in case anyone ever actually watches this, no, I haven't seen Clone Wars. I'm told it's good.
It is good.
It is good.
So when I say I haven't liked anything they've done since, I haven't seen the animated stuff.
Also, Rogue One is underrated. Rogue One is great.
Thank you. I will always come out in support of Rogue One.
Rogue One is amongst the better stuff they've done. It didn't really work for me just because I knew where it had to end up.
Yeah. I just like the fact that they were willing to
do something a little different with the preps.
You know, with the prequel. Will you stop preening, Ryan?
Everyone got really close. Except when I walked out of there, I couldn't remember anyone's name, which is a really bad sign for a Star Wars movie. Even like the original trilogy that I didn't really like, the characters were memorable enough that I could remember their name instead of their archetype.
Well, I remember Jyn Erso.
Yeah.
But probably for the wrong reasons.
Her and Cassian, that's it. I couldn't remember anybody else if you had a gun to my head.
Yeah, I could remember the archetypes, but I couldn't remember the individual characters.
I can't even remember the name of the robot that...
Me neither. And he's hilarious.
Alan. Yeah. What's his face?
Tudyk?
Yeah, Tudyk. I can't even remember his robot's name.
Me neither.
How could you forget Wash's name?
No, I remember Wash, but I was trying to... I couldn't remember Tudyk. But anyway, he plays the robot, and I can't remember the robot's name from Rogue One.
Yeah, and that's the only reason I don't say that I truly liked it, because there are movies I'm fine with leaving and not remembering a character's name and still liking it.
Yeah.
The bar was set so high with the original trilogy for Star Wars that not being able to remember the characters when I left was just like, they didn't do it right.
I like all the Star Wars. It's just a different level of life.
Yeah. You like Rob Zombie movies and Monster House.
Yeah. Yeah, your credibility's in the toilet, buddy.
I'm sick and tired of Monster House being brought in.
Okay, well, fine. You like any version of the cinematic jangling of keys. You're like a toddler.
Wow. That was cold. That was fucking cold.
I stole that from someone going on a tirade about Phase 4 of Marvel being just jangling of keys for a toddler.
You know what? You couldn't be more right. But wow, that was brilliant. Oh, way to drop somebody. That was off the top rope, Brian. You're just wow.
I'm hitting that savage elbow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm about to pull a warrior. You keep it up.
Oh, and how
see,
are you
I was
do
making
that?
A reference to being the pod CM Punk.
I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, Ryan, you want to impress us? Tonight, when you get bored, go watch Event Horizon. Or
no.
Alien Mine. Or, sorry, Enemy Mine. With Dennis Quaid and Lou Gossett Jr. Won an Oscar.
Well, that just ensures Ryan's not going to watch it.
Well, Enemy Mine, it's a phenomenal film. Phenomenal.
Oh, yes. That's why we know he's not going to watch it.
That's right. He doesn't like good movies.
Oh, you fucker.
Yeah. Suppose you could watch Uncle Buck. No, I give up. Let's get into the comics.
About time, to be fair.
Yeah.
So we got a couple Avengers to start us off with issues 15, 16. Then we're going to do Daredevil number 7, a very important issue in the run. And then we're going to do a stretch of 3 Journey in the Mystery issues with 114 to 116. Dan's getting a pretty decent welcome back, actually. None of these issues are really offensively bad, so Let's jump right in to Avengers number 15, which is titled "Now by My Hand Shall Die a Villain." Stan Lee writing this one, Don Heck on art, inks by Mike Esposito, Jack Kirby's on the cover, Artie Simic's on letters. This is a February 1965 release. Oh, my power just flickered. That was fun. And this
you
is a 20-page story.
At least.
Yes,
we're not going to miss out on me covering Avengers 16, also known as the Ryan team of Avengers.
Whoa, what the fuck? 1965, this we're only at the start of it so far, but it's a pretty good year for Marvel getting their shit together a bit, so
as we'll see. I'm into 76 brushing up against 77, and 65 still one of my favorite years to have read through.
Anyways, though, let us see how this Avengers issue fares as Dan takes us away.
Alrighty, going straight off the Marvel database. And let's start by saying the cover is a yawner.
Yeah, the cover's not very good. But
It's not horrible, but it's a bit of a yawner. And the synopsis, "Now, by my hand, shall die a villain."
Oh, this is actually an important issue. I remember what this one is now. I just read this a week ago. How did I forget?
Ah, looks like there's a couple of little tiny milestones in it. Zemo decides again to attack the Avengers. And so his agents kidnap Rick Jones. God, what a damsel in distress this guy is.
I'm going to say right now the wrong person dies at the end of this issue.
No such thing as Marvel comic. Zemo also contacts the Executioner and the Enchantress, and they set free the Black Knigget and the Melter. The four villains attack the Avengers while Captain America sets off to the Amazon to rescue Rick. The Avengers and the villains in New York fight to a standstill. In the Amazon, Captain America rescues Rick, but is then ambushed by Zemo. Captain America is too skilled, however, and Zemo accidentally triggers an avalanche which lands on and kills him. And that's it.
Yeah. Pretty much comes it. A lot of it's a fight issue. It's pretty boring, really, but
It exists to be the last time that the old lineup of the Avengers fight together.
Yeah. And this is also a Giant Man issues the stirring cry, "Avengers Assemble," in this issue. Just in case anybody was wondering.
I don't think that was the first use of it, though.
Probably not, but
I do know Giant Man was the first person to say that, so that might actually be the first Avengers Assemble, which is why it's noted there.
There's other fans we haven't noticed the first, though.
Yeah, could be.
This was just an issue of Avengers that wasn't bad.
Yes,
it was fine.
It was a completely fine issue.
It got a 3 out of me.
Same here. I mean, I enjoyed reading it. I don't care if I never read it again.
I would never read it again, but the highlight is Zemo actually dying here, which is an important plot point for the future of Captain America stories, because it'll turn out that this was Helmut Zemo, and we'll get whatever the other one's name is, but
yeah.
Oh,
I don't know if that's helping.
But the lineages of Zemo's kind of depends on this plot point.
It sticks for a long time, too.
It sure does. Yeah.
I think next time he's... There's another couple other appearances that I think are all flashbacks.
And wow, then yeah, he doesn't appear for a while.
I think he next shows up alive in 89. Because I think all those intervening appearances are all flashbacks. I've read those, and I don't remember Zemo coming back to life in them, but he was prominent in World War II against Captain America, so...
Yeah.
But yeah, this isn't really one that I have much to say about.
Going off the synopsis, there's not much I can say. It's a comic.
Yeah, it's an excuse to have them all fight together one last time before they break them up.
Yeah.
The art was relatively decent, if I'm remembering. Inside.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, that's about it. It's the next issue is a little more interesting. So let's get into it. With Avengers number 16, which is titled The Old Order Changeth. This is written by Stan Lee, arts by Jack Kirby. That's how you know this is an important issue.
Jack actually showed up for the art.
Yeah, that means they want you to read this. Cover art by Jack Kirby, letters by Artie Simic. March 1965 release date. This is a 20-page story. And Bill will cover this one.
Alright. The battle from the previous issue continues, but the Avengers are hindered, as there are too many civilians nearby for them to let loose. Thor creates a dimensional space warp, which teleports the Melter, the Black Knight, and themselves to another dimension. The Executioner and the Enchantress manage to escape since, as Asgardians themselves, they know what Thor was attempting. The Melter and Black Knight are easily captured in the other dimension. No, they're not shortchanging you. This is literally just a one-page blow-off to the cliffhanger at the end of the last issue, because they're not good at doing cliffhangers.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Captain America and Rick Jones bury Zemo and escape his troops. They make their way through the rainforest to reach an airport. When the Avengers hold their next meeting, Thor is MIA as he's gone to Asgard. Wasp remarks that she needs a break from the constant danger of Avengers missions, and Giant Man and Iron Man consider disbanding the team. Just then, an intruder breaks into the mansion and ties up their butler. The intruder is Iron Man's foe, Hawkeye, who applies for membership. He relates how he and the Black Widow were duped into working for Soviet spies, but he now wishes to repent by fighting alongside the Avengers. So he's still totally simping for Natasha, because she wasn't duped. She was the one that did the duping.
Mm-hmm.
He demonstrates his archery prowess by freeing the butler from his bonds with a trick shot. Iron Man, Giant Man, the Wasp, and Hawkeye hold a press conference in which they announce they are looking for new members. Afterwards, they journey by sub to Atlantis and ask the Submariner to join, but he refuses. In Switzerland, the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver learn that the Avengers are recruiting new members. They write a letter to apply. After traveling by cruise ship to the U.S., Tony Stark picks up the mutant siblings. Quicksilver demonstrates his speed by beating Stark's car to the mansion on foot. He even stops to allow the car to catch up to him. Captain America returns just as Wanda and Pietro are being inducted. He is devastated to hear that Iron Man, Giant Man, and the Wasp have all decided to take a leave of absence. Cap will be the full-time leader of the new team. Iron Man's last piece of advice to Cap is that the new team ought to track down the Hulk and convince him to rejoin the team, as they could use his sheer strength. Iron Man, Giant Man, and the Wasp all depart in their separate ways. The new Avengers team of Captain America, Hawkeye, Quicksilver, and the Scarlet Witch reveal themselves to the public, while the world, including many villains, wonder if the Avengers will become a weaker or stronger force.
Hmm.
That's the end of it.
Yeah.
Relatively important issue. I didn't enjoy this one as much as I thought I would. I only gave it a 3. I was hoping to get a 4 to this bad boy, but...
Got it from me. I enjoyed this a lot. I think the shakeup needed to happen.
I agree to that. I just don't think it happened in the most interesting way.
Maybe, but I think bringing Wanda in and things like that, I think, was a good idea.
Yeah, the fact that it's not all Marvel's main eventers helps them out at this point, because they haven't really figured out how to integrate stories across books yet. And now... they only have to worry about what's going on in Captain America's book. Because none of the other characters have books of their own, so they can actually do stuff in Avengers. Spoiler, they dropped the ball big time, but conceptually it's a really good idea.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, it's a good move. I mean, we'll see how it goes in the future issues. Hope you like your heroes to be douches, but...
That's one of the big dropping of the ball moments, is that,
what's that?
The team is just completely unlikable. I actually like how mundane the switchover is. It's
not that it's
the bureaucratic nature of the Avengers at this point that they just have a bunch of meetings and replace the team.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. Yeah. It just I don't know. I do I
TA stuff.
Hawkeye's kind of the one that stands out being the wild card more to me than anything. Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver being on here is pretty good, I think. We'll see what happens going forward. It is interesting how fast they went from that Wanda and Pietro went from full-on villains to being Avengers, so that's pretty cool.
I mean, Hawkeye hasn't been any slower. Hawkeye was a villain in his last appearance.
I mean, that's true.
Right.
Hawkeye's a bit more of a jump, though, because the way him and Iron Man interact doesn't fully really make sense, but it's whatever.
Yeah, Iron Man takes it too well.
Yeah, Iron Man should not be as accepting as he was, considering the past battle.
Yeah. I do think it's a bold choice to make every new Avenger a villain.
Yeah.
I never thought to look for one when I was looking at the back.
But then I suppose at this point they don't have any heroes kicking around that they could add. We haven't seen any heroes created that aren't in books of their own at this point.
Yeah.
Because Black Panther hasn't happened yet. And the Inhumans haven't happened yet.
It's kind of funny that the team changes here and then Hank loses his book, so then he would have been kind of perfect to be back in the Avengers lineup, but
he needed
a break anyway, so it works too.
I think it's really good that... the hell is that dog doing? I think it's really good that they didn't keep Hank in the Avengers. I think the damage that was done to that character by his last year or so of comics needs him to just disappear for a while so people forget how shit his books were.
Yeah, it's for the best that way.
I bet part of what drove this is that Hank was hurting the sales of Avengers.
Probably. Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, that one issue revolved a lot of everyone around him when they fought Mole Man there recently.
I actually haven't minded him in Avengers. I just think people are looking at how shit his book is and aren't buying it.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, we don't know how long Dan might be, so we might as well probably move on to the next comic.
Yes.
Which is Daredevil, issue number 7. This one is titled In Mortal Kombat with Submariner. Written by Stan Lee, art by good old Wallace Wood, and he's on inks and cover art as well. Letters by Artie Simek. This is a February 1965 release date, so this came out the same month as Avengers 15, I believe, then.
Mm-hmm. Wally then does some fucking work here, too.
20-page story. This is probably Wally at his... in his friggin'...
this
best
might be his
here.
Best art credit in the entire order.
Probably.
Wouldn't he doesn't have
me.
Many of them, but it's actually
Dan.
Really good art here.
We're starting Daredevil number 7, Dan.
Okey-dokey.
I'm going to take it away. The Submariner, in order to deal with his restless people and the goon of the warlord Krang, appears on the surface world and forces his way into the law office of Nelson and Murdoch in order to seek the audience of a lawyer. Namor seeks to sue the surface world for its exploitation of the sea. However, when Murdoch explains how ridiculous the notion is, Namor goes on a rampage across the city. Donning his brand new Daredevil costume, Mac goes after and battles Namor in order to convince him to turn himself over to the authorities to answer for the damage that he's done. Although Namor wins the fight, he admires Daredevil's courage in facing the Monarch of the Deep, and so Namor turns himself over to the authorities. However, as the court case starts, Lady Dormer arrives to inform Namor that Warlord Krang has started an uprising in Atlantis. However, when Namor tries to leave the authorities to try to keep him from getting away... that's a messed up sentence. However, when he tries to leave, when Namor tries to leave, the... authorities try to get him back, pretty much. However, when the wheels of justice are unable to turn fast enough for Namor, he breaks into jail, and in spite of Daredevil's attempt to stop him, he manages to escape into the sea in order to deal with the uprising in his native land. So, that synopsis doesn't cover how Daredevil debuts his classic iconic costume here, which is why this issue is so important. His red costume debuts here. Goodbye to the yellow costume for now. It's just setting up Namor's solo title that's coming here soon. But in saying all this, this is actually a really good read in my opinion. I gave this one 4 stars. This is my favorite issue of Daredevil so far.
Yeah, I gave this 4 stars too. This is close to the best appearance of. I know it's not because I haven't read Frank Miller yet, but before Frank Miller, this might be Daredevil's best appearance, and it's one of Namor's best appearances.
Yes, Namor is great here too. The story is ridiculous, but it's ridiculous in a good way. Why wouldn't Namor try to do what he's doing? I kind of like that they cover this here.
Yeah, the idea is stupid and doomed to fail, but it's stupid and doomed to fail in a way that makes sense for a person that's not familiar with human customs to think it would work.
Yeah, no, it makes sense for this undersea monarch, Prince of Atlantis, Namor, to go about doing what he's doing, because he wouldn't know any better.
Yeah, he doesn't know how court cases actually work, so.
Which he makes pretty clear with how he acts for the issue.
Yeah.
This
is my favorite issue we covered this week.
It's same here. This issue is actually almost comedic at times too. It's just a really fun read. Well, there's one we haven't covered yet that it's fighting.
But. Yeah. This one, I also like how well this puts over Matt, because he has no business trying to fight Namor.
No, he doesn't.
A normal human with enhanced senses is not going to stop an Atlantean mutant. Namor is one of the strongest hero, probably the third strongest hero we have at this point.
Yeah, it's probably Hulk and Thor and Namor.
Okay, fourth strongest.
Who did I leave out?
Spider-Man.
Oh, Spider-Man, yeah, that's true.
Spider-Man's strength is, a lot of people forget that he's one of the toughest, like, strongest heroes around, because they don't have
Spider-Man?
Him. Spider-Man? Yeah, canonically, Spider-Man is extremely strong.
He can't
strong.
Even handle J. Jonah Jameson, and he doesn't have any powers.
He is, I just don't think we've gotten to the point Uncle where ben, I would throw him in the died. List yet, necessarily.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I'm not sure that they've made that canon yet. I know the first time his strength is explicitly shown is that, I forget exactly what number it is, but it's the one where he's
trapped
in the water with the huge piece of equipment on his back lifting it up during the...
Yeah, that's coming soon.
Yeah, I know it's soon. That hasn't happened yet. And I'm not sure if they intended him to be that strong ahead of time. Because I know later they made it canon that he always pulls his punches because he'll kill the opponent if he doesn't.
Yeah. No, Spider-Man definitely deserves on the list too. I just didn't have him there in my head yet because of the point we're at in these comics.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, we're in a point where Captain America still has normal human powers.
Yeah.
Although Stan and Jack don't have the best idea of that, because they say that, and then they'll have him ripping a steel door off the wall.
Yeah, it's like he's just really, really strong. He doesn't have powers, he's just super.
Yeah, I think that's explicitly a Jack problem, because he ignores the gaining of super strength when he comes back in the 70s, and still has Cap doing that all the time.
Yeah. Something there with Jack and that he just doesn't want. I think his thinking is probably that he wants Cap to be more relatable to the average American type thing.
I've seen the theory about the 70s also being that there's a fair bit of fuck Englehart in there. Because they were real pissed at Steve Englehart for missing deadlines all the time. And so they may have, if not encouraged, at least decided to not complain about Jack ignoring all the changes Englehart made.
Yeah, fair. Well, let us start our Thwart run. So, we're going to start Journey in the Mystery number 1 to 14 here, the A story. This is the start of a 10-issue arc.
I'd call it a run. It's not really an arc.
Yeah, it's more of a run that's loosely tied together.
Everything flows really well into the next issue, but it's like 3 or 4 distinct storylines that there's just no pause between them for us to insert any other titles.
Yeah. This one, I mean, we get the 10 issues like that, and then we also get a few of the Tales of Asgard after, too, which is
interesting. Yeah, but that's just because of trying to keep books together when possible.
Oh, yeah. So this one is titled The Stronger I Am, The Sooner I Die. This is written by Stan Lee, art by Jack Kirby, inks by Chick Stone. Jack Kirby's on the cover, Sam Rosen's on the letters. January 1965, release date, 16-page story. And Bill's going to take this one away. But before we start, I do want to say, throwing it out there now, I think some of Jack Kirby's best work around this time is on Journey in the Mystery and Thor.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
Journey, and he's about to start his absolute best run in Fantastic Four.
Yes, that will join the conversation here soon, too. But I just wanted to throw out how good Jack's art is on Journey to Mystery compared to some of his other stuff.
Yeah.
Because we shit on Jack a lot.
But idea-wise, this run is cutting-edge story time for the time.
Yes, this is... The fact that this is a run of 10 issues going from story to story that's loosely tied together at this time, this is pretty...
There's not a single continuity error in here that I've found.
There was one or two while I was reading that I saw, but I don't know if I even remember
them.
Within
Thor itself, not fucking up what's happening in other books? Because, I mean, I'm talking about them not a case of them forgetting what they did last issue and contradicting themselves like they do all the time.
Yeah, okay, if it's not fucking with the continuity of everything, I was thinking more of in title. So, yeah, then that's fair.
Yeah, because up until now, they'll frequently forget what they did last issue and say the exact opposite.
There is some of that type of thing happening in this run where they'll have something stated 2 or 3 issues before something else that then goes the opposite way of it or whatever. But it's
okay,
like whatever.
Then I've forgotten some of that, but it is still cutting edge storytelling.
Oh no, it's still great, and a lot of those little things that I'm saying there with those little continuity errors in the title. They're pretty forgivable, too, because I think all of them, besides maybe one, and there's only 2 or 3 tops of those little errors, they're all for the better, I'd say, anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But I might remember what they are for specifically as we go along, but I don't think any of them happen in this first stretch anyway. It's all in next week's books. So
anyway, Thor battles a criminal who... Thor battles a criminal who attempts to elude him inside of a modified bucket racer. Thor pulls him from the vehicle and throws him to the ground. Watching the melee from Asgard is Thor's evil half-brother, Loki. Loki decides to assist the criminal by teleporting a vial of poisonous vapors to the battlefield in the hopes of weakening Thor. The tactic fails, however, and Thor manages to capture the criminal. Frustrated, Loki decides to strike at Thor in another way. He elects to empower an Earth mortal with the ability to defeat Thor. Loki creates a special serum and teleports it to Earth inside the water glass of a convict named Crusher Creel. Upon drinking the water, Creel finds himself rippling with power. He has the ability to absorb the properties of any physical material he makes contact with. He begins causing a ruckus in the prison cafeteria, and the guards rush in and start shooting at him. Creel absorbs the impact of their bullets and transforms into a man of solid lead. Using his weighted ball and chain, Creel smashes his way to freedom. Back at his office, Donald Blake patches up an injured reporter named Harris Hobbs. Hobbs tells him that he is chasing a story involving a superhuman escaped prisoner. Blake grows curious and breaks off a dinner date with Jane Foster to investigate. Blake changes into Thor and flies off towards the Black Mountain swamp area. There he finds Crusher Creel, and the two pit themselves against one another. Thor's hammer strikes against Creel's iron ball, but to no avail. With each blow, Creel absorbs more and more of the Thunder God's strength. Thor creates a whirlwind, hoping to blow Creel off his feet, but this too fails. The reporter Hobbs reaches the scene and tries to help Thor by throwing sticks of dynamite at Crusher Creel. Creel mimics Thor's whirlwind and blows the dynamite back at him. Thor snatches Hobbs to safety before the sticks can explode. Creel manages to escape and drives off in a stolen car. While gassing up the vehicle, he begins fantasizing about the things he can accomplish with his new powers. Creel destroys the gas station with his ball and chain and drives off towards a safe house. Thor tracks him down, the two begin fighting once again. The fight continues for hours, with neither man showing any sign of slowing down. Suddenly, Thor's Asgardian ally, Baldur the Brave, appears before him. He brings Thor to the Rainbow Bridge and tells him that Loki has gone after Jane Foster. Thor decides to abandon his fight with Creel, citing that Loki represents a more menacing threat. As the two Asgardians vanish, Creel, in his arrogance, believes that he has beaten Thor. And that's the end.
Oh, riveting. Riveting.
Long live the Absorbent Man.
The Absorbent Man is awesome.
The Absorbent Man is awesome. He's one of my favorite villains, like C-lister type villains. But this wasn't the greatest for his first appearance, really. It just got a 3 for me. It wasn't
Same
all
here.
That special.
I mean, 3 is about what I'd
three
hope for a long run
it.
Like this. Yeah, 3 is about what I'd hope for a long run like this. And this one definitely got there. I mean, it's nothing special on its own, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. That's about all to say. I have to say about that one.
Yeah.
I was here the whole time to listen to that synopsis. So. Journey of the Mystery 115. What?
There is one continuity. It's not an error. It's an ordering clarification that people will pick up on. This takes place before Avengers that we've already covered. Because in the Avengers, Wasp mentioned that Thor was away on the Trial of the Gods, which is an event that's coming up later in this arc. So at this point, it's between Avengers 15 and 16, most likely.
Yeah.
It's tough to place exactly where these two fit with each other because there's no other points of reference.
The timeline gets messy here.
Yeah, it's the site we use for our order ruled that it was less of a spoiler to see that Thor wasn't present for Avengers because of something called the Trial of the Gods than for later on people reading this long Thor run to run into the new Avengers lineup without any explanation of where they came from.
Why is Cap standing with all those villains?
Yeah. So I just wanted to mention that to prevent confusion for our listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving on to Dan, looks like he is very enthralled by all this. Journey in the Mystery number 115, The Ace Story, titled The Vengeance of the Thunder God. Stan Lee writing, of course, Jack Kirby on art, Frank Giaculo on inks, Jack Kirby and Dick Ayres on the cover, Artie Simic on letters. February 1965 release date, 16-page story, and Dan will take us away with this one.
Okay, sit down and brace yourself, guys. Smoke them if you got them. The Vengeance of the Thunder God. Thor was in the middle of a fight with the Absorbing Man, Crusher Creel, when he was alerted by Baldur the Brave to the danger to Jane Foster. She'd been kidnapped by Loki and brought back to Asgard. Meanwhile, the absorbing man had wandered off to cause trouble without the hindrance of Thor. You know what? I wonder if SpongeBob and the absorbing man could form their own gang. That'd be like the epic, just the best team up ever. The Thunder God immediately went to face his scheming half-brother, Loki. The two fought and exchanged insults while Foster looked on in wonder and fear, not sure why she was a pawn in their fight. Back on Midgard, reporter Harris Hobbs helps the police in their search for Crusher Creel and explains to them that what his powers are. Creel has, in the meantime, found a house in the suburbs, needing sleep and food, and walks in to take what he needs. Back in Asgard, Thor and Loki battle on. Loki tries to freeze the air around Thor, but he breaks out immediately. The rage in my heart, the justice of my cause, the strength of my sinews, these are the spells which shall defeat the master of evil. At that moment, Odin causes an explosion of rock between them and scolds them for engaging in private conflict which hath not the approval of Odin. Loki then tries to blame the fight on Thor. He hit me first after I hit him, claiming that he brought his mortal love, Jane Foster, to Asgard to make her immortal as well. Just as she faints, the strain of the ordeal being too much. Odin is not sure who to believe, knowing that Loki is a trickster. He then calls for a trial of the gods. Thor then asks his father for 48 hours to return Jane Foster to her home and to defeat the absorbing man. After Foster is safely back in her home, Thor uses his powers to make her forget what she saw in Asgard. Whew! Back on Earth, Creel is imposing his will on a couple in the suburbs. They try to make him leave, but it is no use. Nearby, the police are closing in on him while Thor arrives to help. The police find the house that Creel entered, and while Thor tries to convince them not to try to take him down without his help. The reporter Hobbs then goes into the house and taunts him into smashing through the wall and out of the house. Creel then finds himself surrounded by police, as Thor takes command of them and orders them not to fire. Thor then throws his hammer at him, causing him to absorb its strength and power. Thor realizes he must not use his brute strength, but instead his power over the elements. He makes a trap of heat around. When did he power over the elements now?
Just Creel, run with it.
Yeah, okay. Creel absorbs the heat, just as the police fire a grenade at him, which explodes and stuns Creel for a moment. Absorb this, biatch. Thor gives him one more chance to stop and give up, while Creel boasts that he is the strongest, and he's about to finish off the Thunder God by touching the ground and becoming a colossus made of multiple elements at once. Thor waits for a moment to reply, but when none is forthcoming, Thor whirls his hammer faster than a mortal eye can see, changing the air around Creel to helium, causing him to talk in a really funny high-pitched voice and become a gas and float into the atmosphere, no longer a threat to humanity. The reporter, Hobbs, then tells Thor that he realized that he's not the conceited costume show-off. The Thunder God then punches Hobbs in the face and takes off, having to take care of a few things before he is summoned back to Asgard for the trial of the gods. He flies back to take one last look at his beloved Jane Foster, for if he fails, it could be his last look at her. As he does so, Odin calls him back. Whatever my fate, I shall face it like a god. And we're done.
Oh, yeah, I remember how the continuity works. Those few things he had to take place before he went to Pine Over Jane... the last time.
Return library books.
Avengers 15.
Oh, okay.
That's when they do Avengers 15, and he suspiciously doesn't mention it because this comic hadn't been written yet.
Oh. Well, it's a pretty long-winded write-up for what appears to be not a whole lot.
This one squeaks out of 3, but it wasn't terrible.
I kind of liked the fact that they're fighting over Jane in Asgard.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting it off Earth, which helps.
Yeah. I like the fight with the Absorbing Man. I really like how Thor beat him with using the fact that he can't choose to transform into the elements he comes into contact with.
You just got sucked into that fight, did you?
That's the part that kind of loses me a bit, because if he can't control what he's turned into, why hasn't he already turned into an element that floats through the air and shit?
Or like, lives in a pineapple under
Stan
the sea.
Because Stan is not that creative a writer.
Yeah, I know, but that's like a big... like.
It's the massive plot hole that I was going to mention. I still like the idea of it, because I know they don't...
The idea is good.
I know they don't think about the fact that you're always touching oxygen.
Yeah, the idea is... It's a unique way to get your film out of here, and it makes for a great return when he comes back later on the run.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make sense if you put any thought into it.
Yes,
no, it makes no sense at all.
I think
it's jumping
learned...
the shark on his powers a bit.
I think I've learned to not think too much about anything in a 60s comic book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good for you, but it brought it down a little bit for me.
You know, Ryan's right in a sense, because it does... They kind of aren't paying any attention to the reality of the physics that the comic exists in.
I'm not arguing that they're not.
Yeah.
I know Stan's grasp of science at this point.
Which is
and
zero.
I don't expect anything more from it.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
the fact that it was as put together as it was is pretty impressive.
I'm just happy it didn't involve magnets or transistors.
Yeah. That's fair. Or AA batteries.
Or for Dan, spiders. No, anyways, let's move on to our main event with... Oh, my power keeps flickering. With Journey into Mystery number 116, The A Story, titled The Trial of the Gods. My personal favorite issue of this whole run.
This is a very good one.
Okay. Stanley, this is really good. Stanley writes this, Jack Kirby on art. This is why I said there is one that's fighting with Daredevil still left. Vincent Coletta's on the inks here. Jack Kirby, Dick Gyre's on the cover. Artie Simic on letters. March 1965, release date, 16 page story. And I will take this one away.
I want to mention, we've got our Thor theme. Kirby,
who lives in a pineapple under the sea.
Kirby and Coletta on art together. It goes for quite a while on Thor.
Yeah.
And they're mostly responsible for the way, even in the 70s, people are drawing Thor comics.
This run kind of moves Thor up the totem pole of titles a little bit.
This is the run that made me like Thor. Before, it was fine, it was a thing to read. But this is the run where I'm like, I get why it's so popular now.
Yeah.
Thor kind of has, like, the most consistent creative team in terms of quality now, besides, like, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But anyways, let's get into the synopsis. Especially since the power is flickering where I'm at, so might
That's
as well get this
good.
Podcast done. This story picks up a trial that had been postponed in previous issues.
What?
Thor? Oh yeah, because he had the... That's right. They had set up this a little bit before. I forgot about that. Thor had rushed back to Asgard and left his fight with the Absorbed Man to save a kidnapped Jane Foster from his evil half-brother Loki. They were in a heated battle when Odin burst in and confront them about their private conflict that have not the approval of Odin. Since Foster was already in Asgard, Loki tried to use Thor's love for Jane against him by claiming that he had tried to make her immortal as well by bringing her there to Asgard. Thor then asked to be allowed to return her to her home and defeat the Absorbing Man first. So that was the setup from the first part of the arc there, or the run. With his foe defeated, Thor returned and the trial began. Odin asked his son to yield his magic hammer to him so that they would be unarmed when they were sent to Skornheim, the deadly land beyond the Pale of Asgard. As they arrived there, Loki insulted Thor's intelligence by saying that without his magic hammer, he was now unarmed. whereas he still had his cunning and wits. And Loki then produces a bag containing his enchanted Norn stones, which would later come to haunt us in the next issue.
They're going to keep turning up into for quite a while.
Yeah, they're going to continue to haunt us for a while, actually. And he uses one of these Norn stones to show when the bag contains enchanted Norn stones, then used one to show Thor his minions, the Enchantress and Scourge, as they were entering Foster's office. So he uses one of the stones to show a vision of Enchantress and Scourge going to Jane Foster, which, as we're about to learn, Loki was up to. This is all to distract Thor, and he is melted to the ground where the sun came out in Skornheim here, turning the solidified lava to quicksand. So Thor is kind of trapped in some quicksand now after Loki's distraction. Loki used the Norn stone to harden the path for himself and walk away. Thor then escaped using his awesome strength. At the next obstacle, a forest of spiny plants, Loki uses one of his enchanted stones to change himself into an unsolid ghostly figure. Aka, he pulls a Vision, but Vision isn't around yet, and slipped through. Thor was on his heels, though, as he used his helmet and cape tightly wrapped around his arm to smash through the plants and catch up to his half-brother. Thor then subdued him and demanded that he call off his villainous allies for his love of Jane Foster. Before anything else could be said, Yag the Invincible attacked him with one of his deadly energy blasts, throwing the two apart. Again, Loki used the Norn stone to escape, flying out of harm's way, leaving his accursed half-brother still trapped. Thor then dodged numerous blasts of energy, grabbed the rock, and hurls it, straight and true, with the force of a comet, fell into giant Yag, even as David felled the mighty Goliath many ages before. I really don't like that this is taken direct quotes from the comics and throwing them in the synopsis here. Hitting Yag in the head, Thor has defeated the immortal Goliath. Thor then pressed onward toward Loki, despite the time for him to gain a sizable lead. Meanwhile, Loki is facing a new obstacle with the boulder road of Skornheim. He once again uses a Norn stone and creates a whirlwind around himself to cool him as he moves forward. He then finds a danger in his path, which is a horde of hungry carnivorous plants. He uses yet another Norn stone, which contains repellent that no plant life can approach. Back on Earth, Jane Foster was trying to evade her pursuers, the Enchantress and Executioner. A small group of locusts briefly try to help her, but are pretty unsuccessful. They're subdued by a sleeping spell by the Enchantress. As this took place on the streets, one of Rick Jones' team brigade tried to sound the alarm to no answer. The next moment, though, Balder the Brave arrived on Earth atop the Baxter Building and quickly found and challenged the villainous pair. So, Balder had gone to Odin telling Odin that Enchantress and Executioner were after Forest Love, and Odin let Balder go to save her, make sure nothing happened to her. Of course, there's also the element that Asgardians are not allowed to physically harm humans by Odin's rule, so Enchantress and Executioner weren't actually going to hurt her, they were just going to capture her.
I feel like this is the first time we've ever heard about that rule, given that Asgardians have made plenty of attempts of killing humans before.
I'm pretty sure that's the first time we hear that, but I don't think it's the last time. I think that's something they play around with.
Yeah, I think it becomes canon at times, but
they use it when it's convenient to the plot.
I'm pretty sure Stan pulled it out of his ass here because the comic code was annoyed about gods going to kill a human.
This is also what we last week teased, that when Balder arrives to Earth, he arrives in a flame and entrance on the Baxter Building, and that when that happened, the Frightful Four were coming back to check to see if there was any life at the Baxter Building from the Fantastic Four after they seemingly perished last issue of Fantastic Four, and the Frightful Four now think they're alive because they saw fire on top of the Baxter Building. They're like, oh, it's the Human Torch, let's get out of here. But anyways, back in Skornheim, Thor braved his way along the boulder road to the carnivorous plants, and he then found a river that feeds the plants and dives in to avoid them, and he tries to catch up to Loki from here. As he does, they come up to a rocky gap over a fiery pit, which Loki uses a stone to levitate over. As Thor grabs him and also crosses the pit, And as they get across, Loki senses the fatigue that has taken its toll on Thor and knocks him off, giving him just enough time to run for the portal to Asgard. So Loki has won the Trial of the Gods, because the goal was whoever gets back first wins, because this trial existed to prove who was worthy of, and who was telling the lies to Odin or not, and whatever, who was guilty. So, yeah. This is better than the synopsis made it sound, because this was a messy synopsis, and I had to work around a lot of it, so.
Yeah, yeah. The guy who wrote it clearly thought he was very clever incorporating real quotes.
Yeah, apparently. That was really annoying.
Yeah.
But that was actually a really good comic if you sat down and read it. It was a 4-star one for me.
I didn't like really it fun. That much. It was still a 3 for me. But this is definitely the best comic of this run.
Yeah, guys, I got to bail on you. I got
all
people
right.
coming
That's
over.
Okay. We're pretty much ending up anyway. So.
Yeah,
okay.
Have a good one, so, Dan.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for joining.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye. But yes, that was... I enjoyed it more than Bill. I think it was really good. I think this is the best issue of the run for me.
I mean, it was for me too. I just... I think getting out of 3 is probably a little higher threshold for me.
Cause I don't know. I don't give a lot of 4s.
I noticed, like, in my rating... Yeah, but I don't give a lot of... I mean, I'm less likely to go to a 2 than you 2. I think 3 has a wider range for me.
Yeah, you have a really wide range for 3, to be fair.
Because when I'm rating, like, 3 is... This was a decent comic. There's nothing incredibly good about it, but there's nothing incredibly bad either. It's just... It does the job of a comic.
Yeah, it was relatively readable.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, these 3 issues, pretty strong start to a pretty solid run. We'll see a little dip when we return next week for
yeah,
the first issue back.
Yeah, it hit some rough patches in the middle, but...
I think there's 2 of the issues that I give 2 stars or something like that.
I think
yeah,
I only
we'll
gave 1 2-star, but there is
yeah,
definitely
I didn't enjoy
a
it as
couple
much,
that aren't as good.
Yeah. So, I guess what we're talking about, we might as well say what we're covering next week. Next week is all Thor, as we're going to cover Journey into Mystery, issues number 117 through 122, all the A stories, which is going to take us to all but the final issue of the run, of this big run, so, yeah. It should be, I mean, it's a good run, like we said, so it'll be, it's good comics for us, mostly, but...
Oh, I did
it's
give out a 4 on
like
this
Thor,
run.
If you don't like Thor, this may not be for you.
Tune in what next week to find out where my 4-star issue sits.
Interesting. Interesting. But yes, that's next week's comics. Maybe Dan will be back. Maybe he won't. Brother. Dan's pulling an XWF Hulk Hogan on us, but we'll see.
All Thor, that doesn't work for me, brother.
Anyway, guys, we'll end this up here. We hope you enjoyed. Stay... if you haven't been watching the Unchained recently, Bill and I have been doing some fun and great... we've been have a couple book and series in TW 2020 on the go. We have a co-op run where I play as WWE and Bill plays as AEW, and we also have an old 2001 WCW run where we're playing as if Shane McMahon actually did buy WCW, and we try
or
to fix
how hard
WCW can we in
get
2001
by Turner contracts.
Yes, exactly that.
Anyone you'd want to see probably signed to Turner.
Anyway, guys, please do like, subscribe, comment, share if you like to. Available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're on Spotify, let us know why there wasn't really any shitty comics this week, so I don't know what to joke about. Let us know why you're excited for the new Avengers team. Anyway, we'll see you
that
all in the next...
That is the low point of this week, I think.
Well, 15 was a little worse for me, but I couldn't think of any good
jokes. I'm putting my knowledge of the future of that team... rather than
yeah.
that comic, because I really liked that comic. I know how insufferable the Kooky Quartet are to read. Spoilers. I hate them.
And we'll see how I feel about them soon enough. Anyway, guys, we'll see you on the next episode. And peace out.
Have a good one.